Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The Seattle Times calls her the country's go-to gal on grammar. Helpful, smart, funny. USA Today calls her the kind of like the sixth grade teacher you wish you had. Los Angeles Times, delightfully droll. And it's all about grammar girl Mignon Fogarty, one of my favorite guests on the show. Welcome back, Mignon.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for having me back.
Appreciate it. We thought we'd have you back not during a membership drive, so we wouldn't be distracted by that and could just be focused hardcore on grammar. Does it feel like all you do is grammar? Or it seems to me when I'm reading your books, the Grammar Devotional and also Grammar Girl's Quick and Dirty Tips for Better Writing, that it's about a lot more than grammar.
Yeah. Actually, my dirty little secret is that most of what I do isn't grammar. It's what experts call usage, which is, you know, choosing the right word for a sentence or even spelling. You know, homophones like fourth, F-O-R-T-H versus F-O-U-R-T-H. And those are the questions people tend to ask. So, you know, I do occasionally cover grammar, but most of it is the things that come up in people's everyday writing, and that actually tends to be usage more than grammar.
You wrote a nice little posting in your blog called The Volume of a Drop about using one's own judgment. Can you tell that story? Because I thought it was really interesting.
Right. Well, I mean, before I was Grammar Girl, I was a scientist, and I helped students. I tutored students. And there was a guy in a biology class. His name was Roland. And we were explaining how to put a slide, a microscope slide together. So just put a drop of this solution on the slide. And he kept saying, well, how many milliliters are in the drop? And we kept saying, it's just a drop. it's just a drop. And he couldn't get past trying to quantify how big the drop was supposed to be. We're sort of in an impasse. And sometimes there are questions about language that come up that are like that. And what made me think of it is someone asked, you know, when you have a long name for, you know, college, for example, Ohio State University, you write it out the first time, and then you put OSU in parentheses after it. But then, do you ever need to write out the full name again in the document? Is it a long document? Is it a short document? Will people understand? You know, is it a familiar abbreviation? Is it something they might forget by the time they get to chapter 10? You know, and I couldn't find an answer to that question. Mm-hmm. And the answer I came up with, you have to use your best judgment. And it's kind of like that volume in a drop. Like, sometimes there is no answer.
And that really flips people out sometimes.
It does, yeah. People like hard and fast answers. They want to know, do I do it this way or that way? And I try to give people those answers as much as I can. But, you know, English is a fluid, changing language. And, you know, more so than a lot of other languages, too, the French have this body they call the Immortals, which cracks me up every time I hear it. It makes me think of the Saturday morning Super Friends. But the Immortals are part of the French Academy who can control the French language and decide what the official language rulings are going to be. And we don't have that as much in English. We have various style guides, like the Chicago Manual of Style and the AP Style book, and they don't always agree. You know, they have different rules for different situations.
I had somebody write me on Facebook a week or so ago criticizing how I said something, and for the life of me, I couldn't really figure out what it was that I was saying improperly. But people speak differently, Lord knows I do, than they should write.
Oh, it's so much harder to speak properly because it happens so much faster. You know, I'm sure I'll say something incorrect in this interview, and I don't get to look at it and go back and edit it and make sure it's right before I post it or submit it to my editor. You know, we're speaking, and, you know, sometimes what comes out of our mouth isn't absolutely perfect.
Well, you've made me a little bold, too, though, Mignon. You know, I use the word kids not to talk about baby goats, but to talk about human children. And I don't apologize for that anymore. I used to feel kind of guilty about it, but everybody knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah, someone corrected me once on that. And you know what? I went to the dictionary and looked it up, and it's perfectly fine to use kids to refer to children. I mean, it's more, you know, colloquial and informal you know, maybe you shouldn't use it in a scientific article or
right.
a medical report, but when we're, excuse me, when we're just chatting, it's fine.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org if you would like to speak to the grammar girl, Mignon Fogarty. She's on the air with us right now. She'll be with us for the rest of the hour. And we look forward to your questions and comments on grammar or English language usage. Now, how many podcasts have you done now, Mignon, since 2006, I think?
Excuse me. Oh, my gosh. Yes, I've done, I think I'm at 233. I've done one every week for, I just had my four-year anniversary.
Happy anniversary. How do you celebrate something like that?
You know what, Ashley, someone will call in and say four-year anniversary is redundant because anniversary means year, so I should have said my fourth anniversary. These are the things that pop into my head. My family has noticed that I correct myself much more than I used to before I was grammar girl.
Do you, and yet you validate everything I say. So. But does it make you more paranoid, or do you feel like you have this higher standard, or how does that work?
Yeah, you know, it's whenever I'll post something to Twitter or Facebook, and, you know, if there's a typo or I say something, you know, a little confusing, I instantly get corrected. So, yeah, I am more aware and a little bit more skittish about what I post, but, you know, I do it every day, and I just do the best I can, and everyone makes mistakes. I correct them. I take criticism well. So,
over 4 years, how has your demographic changed of who reads you and listens to you? Do you know?
You know, I've always been surprised by the wide range of people who listen. I always thought it would be students and teachers, but I get email messages from truck drivers and CEOs and secretaries. It really does seem to cross, you know, the whole spectrum of people because everybody writes and everybody, you know, seems to feel like they could do better. I think everyone is insecure about their writing at some level, and now because people are writing so much more online, they're being read a lot more than they were 10 or 20 years ago.
Ironically, yes.
Yeah.
Kind of funny how that works. You know, kids especially, there I go again. But there were some, I think, Facebook pages that were popping up. I'm not sure about websites or whatever. People who are anti-grammar girl.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't double check on those to see if they're still out there. Do you still have your anti-fans?
I don't watch them closely. I know they exist. I think that those groups on Facebook came up because teachers assign Grammar Girl for class. You know, and anything that's assigned is, you know, not fun to some people. So it's funny, on our website at quickanddirtytips.com, we can tell when students are in a language lab working on some assignment because they'll start chatting with each other in the comment section of a page. So every once in a while we have to go in and delete all the comments that are like, "Hey, Susan, what's up, Bob?"
I'm a suck. Oh, and so. That's the teachers usually assign the Grammar Girls Quick and Dirty Tips for Better Writing.
Yeah, they do the Quick and Dirty Tips for Better Writing book, and then or the podcast, or they'll have students read the webpage and write comments. There are all sorts. It's great, actually. There are all sorts of ways teachers are using the podcast and the website and the book, and it's wonderful. But I think that there's a little bit of that backlash from, you know, students who, not every student's going to like every assignment.
614-292-8513, and Mary, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. You're on the air with Mignon Fogarty.
Hi. I have a question about the use of past participle or not when you're talking about skim or skimmed milk or can or canned food. I would say skimmed milk, but I noticed that I don't know if it's a difference between English and American English, but I noticed that in the supermarket, for example, it's called skim milk and can food as opposed to skimmed and canned. Is there a correct way of saying it? Is it just a difference in the two countries and the way we speak?
Oh, how interesting. Well, I would say skim milk, but I would actually say canned food. I bet I say skim milk just because of marketing and seeing it on the can all these years. There's another example of wording that has changed. Ice cream used to be iced cream, and then over time it evolved into ice cream. So it's not unusual for words to sort of evolve that way.
Just a natural evolution of the language.
Yeah, and you're right. It kind of doesn't make sense anymore, but that becomes the shorthand way of saying it, and then it becomes the accepted way of saying it. So, and it's so many interesting things like that that you don't even notice, especially about your native language. So when, you know, some of the most difficult questions I get are from people from other countries who are learning English or experiencing American English for the first time and notice the differences that we don't even notice.
Yeah,
I would say skim, and then I would also say canned, but it made me wonder, Mary, when I go to the grocery store next time I'm going to check, you know, they have the signs up above the aisles.
Yeah.
And do they say canned foods?
Canned foods.
Interesting. I never noticed that before, but thank you for your call.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet. We have time for one more before a break. Robert, you're on the air with the Grammar Girl. Welcome to the show.
Is that me?
You.
Oh, okay. I'm going to try not to get tongue-tied here.
are you a fan, Robert?
Yeah, I always enjoy her when she's on. You have sing, sang, sung, but whenever they refer to someone who was, in my opinion, hung, it's always said hanged, H-A-N-G-E-D, and that just sounds awful to me. So if you use sang with sing, why don't you use, no, well, I'm sorry.
Sung.
Sang and sung, why can't you use hung with hang or hung?
Oh, it's a great question, Robert. Actually, it's because of a quirk in English. We have so many quirks. There are two past tense forms of hang. There is hung and there's hanged. And you use hanged when you're talking about a person or an animal, you know, being killed by being dangled by a rope. Uh-huh. And you use hung for everything else. So curtains are hung. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care. And it's because, I forget the exact, I think there are two Old Norse words that combined into one to give us hang, but then the past tense versions still have the two different origins or something like that. But it's because of the origin of the word, and there are two acceptable past tense forms of hang, and you use them in different circumstances.
Wow. You are.
Yeah.
That's very good. Well, it just always sounds so goofy to, or reads so goofy to me. He was hanged. I'm like, why don't they just say he was hung? So now that makes sense. Okay, so clothes and everything else are hung.
Uh-huh. Right.
But people are hanged.
Right. I always think of the that Christmas poem, the stockings were hung by the chimney with care.
Ah.
And then I think of Yosemite Sam actually saying, well, I'll be hanged. Because, you know, in the Old West, there were a lot of hangings, and Yosemite Sam says that. And so that's how I remember the difference.
Great.
Wow. Okay, Robert.
Thanks, both of you.
Thank you.
Sure.
We're going to have to take a break, and then when we return, we'll return to a little music. And more Grammar Girl. If you'd like to join us, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org or go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. And I think, Grammar Girl, you have a Facebook page too, and you've posted on there as well.
I do. It's facebook.com/grammargirl.
All righty. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
This is WOSU 820 NPR News. Thanks for joining us for All Sides with Ann Fisher. And All Sides will be broadcasting live from the Columbus Public Health Farmers Market this Thursday, tomorrow, from 10 a.m. until noon. Join us on the front lawn of the Health Department building at 240 Parsons Avenue. Hear about the importance of farmers markets to increase access to fresh fruits and vegetables for urban residents. That's tomorrow at 10 a.m. on Parsons Avenue. Join us for All Sides with Ann Fisher. And it's 82 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:20 this morning. Cloudy skies with a chance of showers and thunderstorms throughout the day. Also, a little sunshine will peek through those clouds this afternoon. A high of 88. Clouds tonight with a chance of rain and maybe a thunderstorm overnight, a low of 72 degrees. Sunshine for Thursday, but still that chance of rain and a high of 85. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on WOSU 820, NPR News.
March 4th. Grammar can't go wrong. March 4th. You know it won't take long. Drive slowly in a fast car and let the adverbs fly. Get brave enough to boldly go and split right through the sky. Decorate with prepositions over, on, and by. Plant a noun between two trees. Let the adverbs fly. March 4th.
Okay, don't get confused. I think it's August 4th today, not March 4th, right? But Mignon Fogarty, tell us what that's all about.
Right. Well, March 4th is National Grammar Day. And so last year for the occasion, I wrote a song with Eric Appal, a musician in my hometown, Reno. And you can find the song. It's on iTunes. Or if you go to nationalgrammarday.com, you can find the lyrics and the video. And we just thought it'd be so fun to write a song about language, and it has all sorts of little tips and fun things throughout it. So the section you play, you know, it had, there was actually a little secret tip about between versus among in there. You know, I plant a noun between two trees. That's to help you remember that you use between usually when you're talking about two things. Between two trees, and among is for other things. And, you know, decorate with prepositions over, on, and by. That can help people remember what are prepositions. So the song has little language, you know, inside things throughout the lyrics. And, you know, songs help people remember. And I grew up listening to Schoolhouse Rock,
right,
which was a big inspiration for Grammar Girl. So I wanted to create a new song for National Grammar Day that would be fun and also helpful to people.
We will play another cut from that when we return from our next break. But right now we have some questions. 614-292-8513 if you would like to join us. Marianne, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, and thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I'm about to concede defeat on a point, and I'll use Ann Fisher's show as an example.
Geez.
On Facebook today, it said that Ann Fisher with All Sides is on from 10 a.m. dash noon. And I'm seeing this everywhere. I always thought it was from 10 a.m. to noon or All Sides with Ann Fisher, comma, 10 a.m. dash noon. Everybody's doing this now. Should I give up on this?
Well, I think it... I think you should probably give up when it comes to Facebook and Twitter, because I think the standards
I see it on wedding invitations and you know, everywhere.
Oh, yeah, on wedding invitations. I'd hold the line on wedding invitations. Those are some of the most formal things that go out. You know, and that it, you know, it brings up the point of formal versus informal. You know, I consider a Facebook post, that's a pretty informal thing, but, you know, an annual report, a wedding invitation, you know, something, a textbook, those are the kind of things where we really do need to hold the line with language and try to be as correct as possible. And you're right, it should be, you know, 11 a.m. or 8 a.m. to noon. You know, you're right, it should be. But,
thank you.
Yeah.
That doesn't really help let go, but thank you anyway.
Well, in honor of you, Marianne, we will try to do better.
Thank you, Ann.
All righty.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you for your call. 614-292-8513. And let's see. Julie, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. You're on the air with Mignon Fogarty.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I was taught many a year ago that when you have a plural, such as kids, and you want to use the possessive of it, it's plurals, it's, excuse me, kids, apostrophe, and you do not add an S afterwards. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is correct.
Then why do I see everywhere they put apostrophe S?
Because they're wrong, Julie.
Thank you.
I've noticed this. I've noticed this in Microsoft Word. The spell checker will mark it as incorrect. Children's, children's clothes, you know, children, it just has an apostrophe at the end. Men's, women, you know, it marks all of those as incorrect, and it's causing a lot of confusion in the world. But if you want to make it possessive, a plural that ends with S, if you want to make it possessive, you just put an apostrophe at the end.
Thank you. You have a great day.
Thank you, Julie.
Bye.
Bye-bye. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And here's Mark. We have an email from Mark. Oh, it's not ready yet. Okay, well, we have phone calls then. Let's see. Tom, you're on the air with the Grammar Girl.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Occasionally you hear a combination of words or phrases that just sound awkward or clumsy. Let me start with just this short sentence. I'm putting off doing that until next week. Now, I see nothing wrong with that, but you take those two words, putting off, and reverse them, and you have the phrase off-putting. Now, it has an entirely different meaning. I think we all know what off-putting means, but my complaint is that it just sounds clumsy and awkward. What do you think?
Yeah, sometimes there are sentences that aren't actually wrong, but that do sound weird. I think in my Grammar Girl book, there was something about you often hear people talk about a man-eating tiger or a man-eating some monster. Mm-hmm. And someone had sent in a sentence that talked about a flesh-eating man. Yeah, that was it. They were trying to describe a carnivore, someone who was in a vegetarian.
Oh.
and they called them a flesh-eating man, and it was very confusing because when you hear that eating man, you think man-eating lion. You know, it was like this weird play on words, and I think they were trying to be funny, but it was just confusing because we hear sort of what we expect to hear often. So, there are times when things aren't wrong, but there's a better way to say it.
That reminds me, Tom's example reminds me of that phrase when someone says, we, all of us, want to go to the zoo today. Why do people say that way?
I don't know.
Do you recognize it, though? Is it?
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of it is what you hear people saying around you. So it may be a regional thing.
Okay.
Or something. There are all sorts of fun regional differences in English. The common one everyone knows is y'all from the South, but they're all over the country. There are different ways of saying the same
sometimes thing. The correct way is just a little awkward.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tom, thanks for your call.
You're welcome.
Take care. 614-292-8513. And Jackie, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Bye-bye. I have a question about the phrase used to. Such as I used to be a student, but now I'm not. Where did that come from? Is it proper? What does it mean?
Oh, it is proper. I'm not sure where it came from, but people often get confused about the spelling. So it's used to with a D, and people often think it's used to without the D because the way the words run together, it's hard to hear.
Right.
So people often spell it wrong. But the way I remember that is to just think it's past tense, you know. And most words that are past tense and with ED, I'm blanking and can't think of an example, but,
doesn't seem to make sense. So I don't understand really, you know, what it means. I mean, I understand obviously what it means.
Where the phrase came from.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you break it apart, I don't understand.
Yeah, you're right. And, I think that would qualify for what we call an idiom, which is a phrase that doesn't mean what it literally means, but,
it is proper.
Kind of like raining cats and dogs. You know,
I see.
Cats and dogs aren't literally falling from the sky, but we just say it and everyone kind of knows what it means. I think
it's
kind of like that.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Jackie. Take care. Let's see. Now one of those emails are ready. If you want to email us, go to allsides@wosu.org, or you can call us at 614-292-8513, or go to Facebook, All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. That is an option as well. This is from Mark. He writes, I am a longtime follower of Grammar Girl, and I've seen her at two New York events.
My question for today, the most annoying practice I regularly hear in the business setting is when educated and high-level people say, please call John or myself, or get in touch with myself. I'm sorry. What's your quick and dirty tip to help people remember not to use myself, but rather to use me?
Yeah, well, I remember Mark, and hi, thanks for listening. He's absolutely right. For some reason, people think it sounds more formal or professional to say myself, please call John and myself tomorrow. And it's just out and out wrong. So myself is what's called a reflexive pronoun. And the way I remember this is you think of looking at yourself in the mirror, and you say, I see myself in the mirror. And it's a word you use to reflect back to earlier in the sentence when you've already talked about yourself. So you really should only have myself after you have I earlier in the sentence. I baked this cake myself. I see myself in the mirror. Mm. And then the easy way to know how to get those sentences right is just imagine how you would say them without anyone else in the sentence. I think most people would say, please call me tomorrow. So when you're adding someone else into the sentence, that doesn't change anything. It should be, please call John and me tomorrow. So most people wouldn't say, please call myself. You know, they would say, please call me. And so think about that, how you'd say it if you were by yourself, and then add other people in as needed.
There was another I was noticing, and this is something I didn't know. I was looking at your book yesterday or the day before. When you're listing yourself, I always believed that you always list yourself last. Like, Mary, John, and I are going to the fair. I have a fair thing. I went to the fair over the weekend. And that's not true. You don't have to do it that way. That's just a politeness thing.
It's true, but it's not as much a formal grammar rule as it is a question of politeness.
Gotcha.
So you're right. You are always supposed to put yourself last in a series. But there's no real logical grammar reason for it. It's just more a matter of politeness. So I always think of, you know, you open the door and you let everyone else walk through before you. It's mm-hmm. sort of the same in a sentence. You open the sentence and let everyone else go first.
Okay. 614-292-8513. And Lori, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a question that was triggered by the last person asking about children. If the word is singular and it ends in an S by itself, for example, a last name that ends with an S, like maybe Sims or Jones, would it be the Jones's house with the Jones apostrophe S, or would it be Jones with no S, second S on the end of it?
Yeah, there are actually two questions embedded in there, but I'll answer the first one. Most people are shocked to learn that it's a style choice. You can do it either way. So you could write, if you're talking about Bob Jones's Ferris wheel, you could say Bob Jones with just an apostrophe, Ferris wheel, or you could write Bob Jones's, J-O-N-E-S, apostrophe S, Ferris wheel. And it's a style choice. Either way is correct, and you should just choose one way and be consistent. Some people go by whether you pronounce that second S. So, you know, if you say Bob Jones's, then you'd add the S to the end. But, you know, for, like, maybe you'd say Barry Bonds home run, and you don't pronounce that second S, then you wouldn't put it in. But it's really fascinating, and people fight about it. There's Supreme Court justices actually had a little kerfuffle where one justice thought it should have an S and one thought it shouldn't. And in their opposing opinions, they did it two different ways, and it's funny.
Lori, thanks for your call.
Sure, thank you. Bye-bye.
You know, this just underscores, Mignon, that this is important stuff. Okay? This is really important stuff.
The Supreme Court cares.
Exactly. Emily, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. My question is there a rule, good and well? I have a hard time in some situations knowing which one to use. I mean, you did a good job. I want my meat well done. But... when they say, how are you? Are you well or are you good?
Yeah, this comes up a lot. I actually covered this in my first book, Grammar Girls, Quick and Dirty Tips for Better Writing. And people will argue with me, but I've done extensive research on this, and it's fine to say I'm good. A lot of people think that you should only respond, I'm well. But it has to do with a lot of complicated grammar stuff that most people probably don't care about, but it's because am is a linking verb, and linking verbs can be followed by adjectives, and good is an adjective, so it is grammatically correct to say I am good. And some style guides say that you should say I'm well when someone is asking about your health. So, you know, if you've been in the hospital and someone says, how are you, and you're doing better now, you say, I'm well. But if someone's asking about sort of your general, how's your day going, it's perfectly acceptable to say, I'm good. Okay. But I'll qualify that with, a lot of people don't know this rule, so a lot of people will think you're wrong if you say, I'm good. So it can get you in trouble, even if you're right. So unless you're prepared to have a debate about linking verbs and adjectives, sometimes it's better to just stick with I'm well.
Okay.
Something else.
Well, Emily, you know what? Emily, I've got so many people waiting. I got to let you go.
Okay. It is a common question. Thanks for calling.
We got to take care of it. All righty then. Let's see. Margaret, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you for having me.
You bet.
It's nice to talk to you in person, Grammar Girl. I have a question. Well, I would like you to speak upon the word momentarily, because in my family, the joke has always been, if the flight attendant says you'll be in the air momentarily, it means the plane's about to go down. But most people seem to think that it actually means in a moment instead of for a moment, and I was wondering if you would speak on that.
Yeah, you're right. The technical difference, and it's the perfect example, is the airplane. You know, they say we'll be in the air momentarily, and what that technically means is we'll be in the air for just a second, and then we won't be in the air anymore. Momentarily means for a short, very short period of time, but most people don't know that. So, you know, if you say, oh, like say you're waiting in line at the doctor's office, and the nurse says, she should say, I'll be with you in a moment. Not, I'll be with you momentarily. Yeah. You're right.
Thanks for just confirming it and saying it out there in public.
You bet.
Thank you, Margaret, for your call. I know I find Grammar Girl very validating myself. And we'll return with Mignon Fogarty, Grammar Girl, in a few minutes. And 614-292-8513 if you don't know it by heart already. Or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. To All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Federal prosecutors have charged 16 current and former New Orleans police officers for shootings and cover-ups in the days after Hurricane Katrina. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with investigative journalist A.C. Thompson of ProPublica, who has been investigating these shootings as well as alleged hate crimes committed by a white militia. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Thanks for joining us for All Sides with Ann Fisher today, and you can join All Sides tomorrow when we'll be broadcasting live from the Columbus Public Health Farmers Market. That's from 10 until noon tomorrow. Join us on the front lawn of the Health Department building at 240 Parsons Avenue. Hear about the importance of farmers markets increasing access to fresh fruits and vegetables for urban residents. Join us tomorrow beginning at 10 on Parsons Avenue for All Sides with Ann Fisher, and we hope to see you there. It's currently 83 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:40 this morning. Cloudy skies today with a little bit of sunshine, but there is a good chance of showers and thunderstorms off and on throughout the day, a high of 88 degrees. Clouds tonight with a chance of rain, maybe a thunderstorm, and a muggy night, a low of 72. Some sunshine looking ahead to Thursday, but still that chance of showers, and a high of 85. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Present is continuous because we are singing. The past was continuous because you were ringing. The future is continuous when you will be bringing a love of good grammar to the whole world. Singing March 4th.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. And once again, not to confuse, it is August 4th, but you can hear that song. We have a link to the Grammar Day song on our website, wosu.org/allsides, if you want to go to that and listen to the whole thing. Because with us today is Mignon Fogarty, the Grammar Girl herself. Is that right? The Grammar Girl herself?
That's right.
Is that right to say? Mignon Fogarty, the Grammar Girl herself. Is that?
Yeah.
Is that
yeah.
right? Okay. See, yeah. You just start questioning everything. All righty. So let's see. Who's next? Nancy, you're on the air with Mignon Fogarty. Welcome to the show.
Oh, did you say Nancy?
I did.
Oh, I only heard static, but I hear that a lot of times when my name is used.
Well, I think I was saying it maybe right as I pushed the button, so I apologize
okay.
for that.
No, that's okay. I always grew up, well, I did grow up, using the term complexioned. He is light-complexioned, but I have heard everyone else say he is light-complected, and I felt that I was right and they were wrong, but I saw in the latest dictionary that complected is used in there. Is that correct?
Boy, I don't know off the top of my head, but usually, I mean, that would be what I would do. The right thing to do is to check a dictionary.
Mm-hmm.
And but it is interesting how words get included in the dictionary because they're included because of common usage. So
right.
if enough people start saying complexioned, mm-hmm. a dictionary may include it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It can become sort of the new right way.
Right, right.
And some dictionaries are more permissive than others, too.
Well,
but,
I think that's true.
So I don't know off the top of my head, but you did the right thing by checking the dictionary.
Okay, and the other thing I just want to say is me and him is going to the library this afternoon. Every time I hear that, I could just scream.
Oh,
you can't teach grammar anymore.
Okay.
He and I are going to the library.
Oh, I know. But
well,
if my children and grandchildren say, me and him are going.
Well, Mignon, how can somebody remember whether it's me or I? Thank you, Nancy.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the same thing we were talking about with myself. For some reason, people just lose their brains when they have more than one person in a sentence. If you think about how you would say it with either of the people individually, you know, you would always say, I am going to the library, and he is going to the library. So when you combine them, it's he and I are going to the library. It doesn't change when you have multiple people in the sentence. But for some reason, people just go all crazy when there are two or three people in a sentence. I don't know why. So just think of yourself alone.
So we have an email from Jim. If you'd like to email us, go to allsideswithannfisher@wosu.org. I'm sorry, allsides@wosu.org. This email is from Bob. Our township motto is, where the natural beauty still abounds. This seems really awkward and possibly grammatically incorrect. Can you address this? Where the natural beauty still abounds.
There's nothing jumping out at me as grammatically incorrect about it. Where the natural beauty still abounds. You know, I don't hear anything wrong with it. There might be an implied subject, the place where natural beauty still abounds. So it might sound odd because, you know, it has sort of an implied subject. But I can't think of anything wrong about it.
Okay. We have an email from Jim as well. Is it than me or than I? Either, in other words, she is much better at spelling than me. Now, this is the me and the I thing again.
Yeah, oh my gosh, this is a huge grammar controversy. There are a few in the world, and there's a whole article about it on quickanddirtytips.com. It's way too much to go into on the radio, but what I always do is I always say, she's much taller than I am.
Mm-hmm.
I add the verb after it, and then it's clear which one you should use. But, you know, people, grammarians argue about whether it should be than I or them me. There are two camps.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Yeah, there's some hot grammar debates.
Grammar is a hot issue, as you can tell if you were seeing the way my board is lit up right here. Now, let's see. Dave, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. So I'm sort of on the front lines of this, at least from an educational point of view. I teach at one of the liberal arts colleges here in Ohio. I'm not an English teacher, so I come from this from a science background. But, you know, what strikes me is no one reads anymore, and so we have a whole generation who are just atrocious writers. And so I guess I'm not complaining so much, but just recognizing a phenomenon that the language may be in a huge state of flux at the moment. So, you know, trying to define all these rules, and we may see that in 200 years, what was completely wrong will turn out to be accepted correct English.
Oh, I'm sure we will. I mean, if you look at language 200 years ago, it was completely different. The more I read, the more fascinating it becomes. For example, there are all these words that we use all the time that people objected to as just heinous 200 years ago.
Sure.
You know, people thought
terrific comes to mind.
Yeah, celebration, lengthy. You know, these are words that people tried really hard to keep out of the English language. You know, lengthy, celebration. You know, I mean, they're words we wouldn't even think twice about using today. So I'm sure in 200 years, we probably wouldn't recognize a lot of the language that will be common and standard. It is an evolving thing. But what's interesting, it happens slow enough that it annoys people.
But I guess my question then is, what's the rationale for spending so much time correcting? Of course, when you're doing, you guys have brought up the point, when you're writing professionally, you must be correct. But mm-hmm. there's a whole other set of language that we don't, it seems not to be required to be correct.
Right. So why do we continue to fight this battle that we know is a losing battle? Essentially the question is, you know, it's a great philosophical question. And there, in the 4 years that I've been Grammar Girl, I actually have become much more liberal because you just become aware that language is changing. But also language reflects sort of social norms. It's kind of like how we dress. You know, it's a way of showing respect. It's the rules of society that sort of keep everyone on the same page and help people communicate clearly. And people do judge you on the way you speak and write, just like they judge you, you know, on what you wear to an interview. Or,
sure.
You know, if I were writing, there are a lot of rules. Like, for example, you're not supposed to start a sentence with the word hopefully. You know, people get all upset about that. I actually think it should be allowed, but I would never advise anyone to do it because it'll get you into too much trouble. Like, you should never
right.
start a sentence with hopefully in a cover letter. So, you know,
yeah, sorry, go ahead.
You know, if you want to be taken seriously and if you sort of are participating in conservative society, then it's important to follow the rules. But you're a musician, if you're an avant-garde artist, you know, it's almost your job to push the boundaries of language.
Absolutely. What was so interesting when you said conservative society, because you'll recall a few years ago there was a national championship team who was invited to the White House and someone wore flip-flops, and it was a huge uproar, and it's sort of the fashion equivalent
of
using poor language.
Yeah, it's exactly like that.
But from the young person's point of view, there was no disrespect intended towards the office. It was the old guard who said, "How could you have done something so obnoxious?" And so there's just an interesting generational thing that's going on, I think, at the moment.
Dave,
yeah,
thanks for your call. Sorry. Thanks for your call, Dave.
Yep.
Appreciate it. Take care. 614-292-8513. And Jerome, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I'm calling to vent a little and sort of segue from some of the things some of the other callers have made. And I'm just really disappointed with the attitudes that educators, K-12 educators, are having increasingly about grammar and spelling and stuff.
What are those attitudes?
Well, I was talking with one teacher, and they don't teach penmanship anymore. And she said, you don't need it because you have email. And I said, does that mean you don't need to teach spelling because you have spell check? Does that mean you don't need to teach English at all because you have voice recognition software?
And what'd she say?
She was just dumbfounded. She didn't have an answer for it. And recently I went to a workshop with English teachers for people who are visually and hearing impaired. And this one guy said, you know, we were looking at this new hardware and software, and this one guy said, oh, this is great. I wouldn't have mind writing reports when I was a kid if I didn't have to write the footnotes. And I'm going, you know, that's ridiculous. You know, I mean, that's a part of what the task is. That's a part of what the job is. Simply because you don't enjoy a part of a job, that doesn't mean you don't do it, or and that doesn't mean you stop teaching it to others.
Okay.
And one other English teacher chimed in, and she said, oh, you know, you don't need to teach how to write footnotes or endnotes at all anymore because it's all available online. You just tell, you know, the system what style you want to use. But that's not teaching people what it's used for, what it means.
Mignon, what do you think about that, the exercise of it? Thanks, Jerome.
Yeah, it's sort of...
Are you there?
Oh, I don't know. It's sort of the same question as whether students should be allowed to use calculators in math when they're doing taking math tests. It's sort of a philosophical question. I believe, too, that, you know, teachers should teach spelling and... you know, how to write endnotes. You know, going back to what the last caller said, you know, education is an area where we should hold the line. You know, we should teach the rules, and you know, if people choose to break them, that's their choice. But they should know that they're breaking them. You know, often, you know, writers will. Especially novice writers will say, oh, well, it doesn't matter, you know what I mean. Or, you know, oh, the language rules don't matter. But they're breaking the rules because they don't know the rules in the first place. And if you're going to be a great writer, a brilliant writer, you need to know the rules first and then choose when it's appropriate and stylistically powerful to break them. You know, but it was interesting what he said about penmanship. I recently read a study that students with good penmanship get better grades on the same. You know, they did a study where they had a paper written with good penmanship and bad penmanship, and the one with good penmanship, even though it was identical in content, got a better grade. So
that's interesting.
I've been more careful about how I write.
It's interesting because when I've judged student writing contests and that sort of thing, I really have to force myself not to be swayed by the writing, you know, the penmanship. And really look at the meaning and the content. We have an email from Sherry. Is there ever any proper use for the S on the end of toward or for forward?
Oh, it's a British versus American difference, I believe. I think they say towards and backwards in Britain, but in America we say toward and backward, if I remember correctly.
What about forward?
I think it's the same.
Same thing. Okay. All righty. Let's see. Andrea, you're on the air with Grammar Girl. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. I was talking with a friend of mine who I think English is probably his fourth language, and we were having a debate last night about the use of shall in the singular second person, and he insisted that you cannot say you shall. And, you know, so we looked on our iPhones and what have you to try to find the rule for it, and we found representative from you know, both schools of thought, and I just wondered if you had anything to say about that.
I was having a little trouble hearing. Is it shall, S-H-A-L-L?
Yes. Like he said he insisted that you cannot say you shall.
Like you shall...
Wash the car?
You shall go wash the car.
You shall
But that's grammatically incorrect.
Huh. I don't know off the top of my head. It sounds awkward, but shall is one of those words that's sort of awkward in general because it sounds very formal.
Right, it's going out of use.
Yeah, it's a word that, you know, people may have used commonly 100 years ago, but hardly ever used now. You'd use it more jokingly, or, you know, shall we dance? Or,
right,
you know,
right,
shall
right,
I
right.
take your coat? You know, when you're being sort of jokingly polite, for example. Yeah, I have no idea, but it sounds odd. But I can't say for sure.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry.
All right, thank you. In the spirit of I'm not afraid of being criticized, Nancy, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
No, Ann Fisher, I wanted to congratulate you because one time I probably was a little unfair because I said you said gotcha a lot. And you don't say that anymore. Do you realize that?
No, I don't. Didn't.
You don't say it any. I haven't heard you say it. But there's a word choice that you use that I don't, and a lot of your guests do too. And I don't know what makes us different, but the word is folks. I notice the Grammar Girl says people. I say people or individuals. But you and a lot of your guests and a lot of people I know use the word folks, and I never use it. What do you think?
I don't think it's actually wrong. I'd have to look it up to be sure. But
it's a preference.
It's more informal. It's sort of conversational.
Well, pun intended, it's folksy.
I was thinking it's very folksy.
Yeah. And I use language. My mother died recently, and she would use words like pocketbook or billfold, and I use those words now because it makes me feel good because it brings her back. It's like you one time had a guest on talk retro to me.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's fun to use the words. Or I'm not Jewish, and I was going to call in the last segment. I heard Marvin Hamlisch say he wanted to marry, I want to make sure I say this correctly, Chicksa, and he wound up marrying Terry Blair. But sometimes I use words like, oh, I don't feel like schlepping to the store again. Sometimes it's fun to use language just because it sounds good and it just is enjoyable.
I agree.
It is fun. There are words that are just fun to say. I love kerfuffle.
I love kerfuffle, too.
But the one word I will not use is awesome. I just can't get into the younger person's, I won't say folks, lexicon and use awesome because I think that's a word that's reserved for the Grand Canyon or something spectacular. I still, being in my 50s, say cool.
I do, too.
Awesome.
I say super cool.
Thanks.
Nancy, thanks for your call. We just have a really short amount of time left. So let's see. Fred, I want to get to Fred. You've been waiting a long time. Welcome to the show, Fred. Just make it real quick, though.
Thanks, Ann. My pet peeve is the expression went missing. I hear newscasters say so-and-so went missing last week. Sounds more proper to me to say so-and-so has been missing since last week.
What do you say, Mignon?
I agree. It was actually the Grammar Girl pet peeve of the year a couple of years ago, and people think it came from Britain, actually. There was a very famous case in Britain where a little girl disappeared, and all the news over there said she went missing, and then American newscasters picked it up.
Interesting.
So it may be a British English thing.
Mignon, that's all the time we have.
Oh, it was delightful. It was fun to be on, Anne. Thanks for having me.
It was so much fun to have you on. Mignon will be back in October. She is the author of Grammar Girl's Quick and Dirty Tips for Better Writing, also the Grammar Devotional, and her podcasts and her website. She's got it all. So go to our website at wosu.org/allsides and look for the links to that. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at wosu.org, WOSU 820, NPR News.